Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It is a Monday morning. That means my dad will be calling in to tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we also have a Blackhawks Express to play. We're going to play another round of pop-up video, me and Esmeralda, and then I'm going on vacation. And I'll be back in the new year. I'll be back January 2nd, I believe, is when I'm off. And I hope everybody has a great holiday, great Christmas, great New Year, great Hanukkah, all that good stuff. And if you would like to join us, it's 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200 for talk and text. You can check us out on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page at facebook.com/Nick D Show. Now, last year we had a Star Wars film come out called The Force Awakens, and as a result, my two partners in crime here on Monday morning, Colin Suter and Eric Childress, are huge Star Wars fans. Have a bunch of collectibles and toys and all kinds of cool stuff, and we had them come down and review the movie. And we figured since there's another Star Wars movie that opened up this weekend, we would bring Eric and Colin live in studio to talk about it. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Welcome to the studio. Now, I want to mention that we have a web-exclusive video that is only on our webpage that you can see. You can see Colin and Eric brought down a bunch of their Star Wars toys and collectibles and cool stuff, including Colin has an actual working BB-8 robot.
Yes, I
right?
do.
That he runs around and...
He does run around.
Yeah.
You can just set him on the floor and he'll run around.
Yeah, and he's BB-8. He's the little droid from last year, The Force Awakens. And so you can see that in its full glory on the video. And Eric brought in like a Lego X-Wing that he built himself, and the Han Solo in carbonite phone holder.
That's right.
And all kinds of other really cool stuff. There's actually, you get to see some VHS, classic VHS tapes, a 16-millimeter film what's it for, the teaser?
The teaser for the first Star Wars.
The teaser for the first Star Wars.
Yeah.
And so all that stuff is there, and Colin and Eric talking about their memories of Star Wars and the first time they saw it and all that cool stuff. So, but that's only on the web, so you have to go to WGNRadio.com. The video will be up soon, and you can check that out, and it'll be a web exclusive on WGNRadio.com for the Star Wars stuff. So, all right, well, welcome, guys.
Thank you.
We not only have Star Wars, the new Star Wars film to talk about, Rogue One, but there are a couple of other films that open. Now, which ones have you what have you seen that's on the list for this week, Colin?
Just Rogue One and La La Land.
Okay, and Eric?
And I've seen those two and Collateral Beauty.
Okay, all right. I've seen Rogue One and La La Land. I did not see Collateral Beauty.
like most of the world.
It made no money over the weekend. What does that say about Will Smith? I mean, you know,
that if he's not in a science fiction movie, then people aren't going to care.
Even if it's, well, I mean, After Earth was a bomb, wasn't it?
After Earth was a bomb.
That's science fiction, right?
That's true, but it was M. Night Shyamalan, so that roots it out.
Yeah.
I mean, people did see Pursuit of Happiness. That was a huge hit when that came out.
Right.
But it's like ever since 7 Pounds... Right. Okay. People aren't exactly trusting Will Smith's dramatic taste.
And when he had concussion last year.
Concussion last year, which nobody
went.
Saw.
And there was some sort of weird push to get him to get nominated for an Oscar, but that didn't happen.
Yeah, I think the Golden Globes nominated him because they wanted him to show up at his party.
Sure.
But yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll get to that a little bit. We'll get to the numbers a little bit later on. Mm-hmm. But why don't you, Eric, start us off? By the way, we're reviewing all the new movies, and we'll talk about box office. Actually, you know what? Before we get to the movies this week, the Chicago Film Critics Association announced their winners.
Yeah.
Would you guys care to talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, we had our awards dinner on Thursday night that we've been having at Zia's Lago Vista for several years now. They've been really gracious to host and give us our little room and have a fantastic meal. And then we announce all of these awards. And it's, The big awards are there. I mean, there are really sort of three movies right now that are sort of dominating the awards season, and all three of those did very well Thursday night. Manchester by the Sea, Moonlight, and La La Land all won several awards. Moonlight took home Best Picture from us.
Mm-hmm.
Manchester by the Sea won the most awards with 4, including actor, supporting actress, screenplay. Best Original Screenplay, and Most Promising Performer for Lucas Hedges.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the four that it won. And then Moonlight won Best Picture and Best Supporting Actor for Mahershala Ali. And what was the other one? Oh, Best Director.
Director, yeah.
Barry Jenkins won Best Director. Jackie won two awards, Natalie Portman and Michael Levy's score. La La Land won Cinematography and Editing. And a really big surprise, a big showing amongst the nominations that we talked about last week, and also won three awards, was The Handmaiden.
Yeah.
Yeah, really terrific movie. Mm-hmm. And deserving. I mean, like, art direction, that movie is, you know, stunning to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Best foreign language film, of course, and then Best Adapted Screenplay, which was a surprise to a lot of people. But we like that. We like surprises.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Best Animated Feature went to Kubo.
It was a good list. We had a really good list of animated films. I was really proud that everyone didn't just go for your Finding Dory's and your. I mean, Moana got nominated. A lot of people like Moana. We had Tower was nominated, and Kubo,
Zootopia,
Tower, Moana, and.
I can't remember.
I'm blanking now.
It was
another kind of strange one.
Yeah.
It was an inspired choice. Okay.
Yeah. Best documentary went to O.J. Made in America.
Yeah.
Which is a stunning piece of work.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And then I'm very thrilled about the Most Promising Filmmaker Award.
Yeah, Robert Eggers for The Witch.
For The Witch. That's nice.
That is great.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, there they are. Those are your winners. And tell everybody the website that people go to.
Yeah, chicagofilmcritics.org. So all the information on the awards are up there, as well as all the members and the whole history of the awards. So if you want to see what we did in years past, it's all up there.
Okay, cool. All right, now let's get back to the movies. And we mentioned the disastrous box office that Collateral Beauty had with only $7 million over the weekend. It's Will Smith's latest movie, and Eric bit the bullet on this one.
Ooh.
And went to go see Collateral Beauty. So tell us about it, Eric.
I wish I bit a bullet. here's the funny thing about this movie. I'm talking about it here, it's going to sound like I'm doing a spoiler, actually, because the trailer is so misleading on this movie that. It's going to sound like a spoiler.
Well,
but,
let me just say this.
Yes.
When I read the review in the Trib, it wasn't.
Wasn't Michael Phillips?
No. Carrie. I can't remember.
Okay.
Anyway, when I read the she did the plot synopsis, I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You're giving away a lot here.
Yeah. No. This is the setup of the movie.
Okay.
Okay, so I'm going to go into it because this happens in the first 20 minutes. This
right. Now, you were surprised considering, you know, considering the trailer.
Yes.
Because the trailer makes it look like it's like a supernatural.
Yeah, it's a Wonderful Life, Miracle on 34th Street, the mystical beings coming down to help you with your grief.
That's right,
type
story.
Yeah. Right. Okay, so in the movie, Will Smith plays the head of this big, like, advertising company. And at the beginning of the movie, he's giving this big speech, and he's talking about love, time, and death, and how, I don't know how that helps you with advertising, but it's a very inspirational speech, and he gives it out. Flash forward 3 years later. I still don't understand what the speech is about, but flash forward 3 years later, and he's a shell of the man that he once was because he has lost his 6-year-old child.
Mm-hmm.
He spends all his days in the office fixing elaborate domino concoctions, metaphor alert, if you will, and just setting him up for 5 days, knocking him down, going home, and his supposedly his good friends and coworkers, who are played by Edward Norton, Kate Winslet, and Michael Pena, are all very worried about him.
Mm-hmm.
He can't get out of his funk. You know, his kid died, for God's sakes. They can't figure out how to get him out of his funk. But at the same time, business is not doing great because he's the head and he's not meeting with the business people that he needs to.
Right.
Okay. So they come up with an idea. Edward Norton, Keira Knightley, plays a woman who comes to the ad agency and kind of reinvents their slogan for something. Edward Norton's impressed, follows her out because he's also kind of a horny guy, and he follows her to a little theater shop. And she's there meeting with her theater group, also played by Helen Mirren and Jacob Lattimore is his name. This trio working on this play. And Edward Norton decides to hire them to gaslight Will Smith into believing they are love, time, and death. And this is somehow either
that they've manifested themselves as love.
Right. Because of what I did forget to mention is that Will Smith, in his catharsis, writes letters to love, time, and death. Puts them in an envelope, mails them, and they've had a private investigator following him. She steals the mail, federal crime, steals the mail, and tells them that's what he's doing. That's why they get this idea.
Okay. Hang on a second. Okay. We got a break.
Oh,
we got to do a commercial. Come back. You can finish the plot.
Okay.
And then we'll hear what Eric thinks of Collateral Beauty. And thank you for seeing it, Eric.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll take a break. And by the way, we're going to talk more Star Wars coming up in addition to reviewing Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. And, of course, we're going to review La La Land in a little bit, too. So we got to take a break for the news here on 720 WGN. We'll be back with more movie stuff after this. All right. Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. So this is the last show that I'm hosting for 2016. I'll be back. I'm taking some time off for the holidays. Hope everybody has great holidays. And, coming up a little bit later on, we'll jump into another pop-up video segment. My dad will call in and tell a joke. We got a Blackhawks Express, an exciting weekend in hockey. But the Hawks are playing great, great hockey. So we'll get to that. And much more. But right now, it is, as I mentioned, Monday morning, so that means the Monday morning movie reviews. And we are very happy to have live in studio, Colin Suter and Eric Childress are here. Guys, welcome.
Thank you.
The occasion is another Star Wars movie has been released, and these two guys really love Star Wars. And again, a web-exclusive video will be up on our website at WGNradio.com, where Colin and Eric talk about their love of Star Wars and show off some of their really cool Star Wars collectibles and toys, including a BB-8 that actually works. And all of that is going to be available at WGNradio.com on an exclusive web video. So make sure you you check that out on our website. Okay, we got regular movies to talk about, including we'll do an extended bit about Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, a little bit later on. But right before the news, Eric was telling us about the fantastic plot for Collateral Beauty, which is the new Will Smith film. We're back. And Eric, I just want to say that when I was reading the review, as I mentioned to you, I read the Trib review, and when they said that the three people were hired, they were actors hired to do this, having seen the trailer a million times because they showed it before every movie that I saw in the last 3 months, I was like, whoa, that's a big reveal there. But that's the actual plot of the movie.
That's how it starts.
And it sets up the beginning of the film. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, okay, so hire them, and then basically, so it's going to do one of two things. Either A, it's going to snap him out of his funk by having these conversations with ghosts.
Right.
Okay, that they make him to believe. And they even actually hire people to walk by and go, who's that man talking to, mommy? To make him think he's actually talking to ghosts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, okay. And so it's either going to do that, or it's going to go so far that they're actually going to erase Helen Mirren and Keira Knightley digitally out of photos that they're taking of him to make it look like he's talking to nobody so that they can then declare him incompetent and take the business away from him.
Wow.
These are his friends.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
Okay? And I should also mention that as this does start to work, there's also another character played by Naomi Harris, who is a grief counselor who specializes in people who have lost children.
Okay.
And he finally begins the strength to begin talking to her. Okay.
That's insane.
It is insane. And I don't think any of us in here are averse to movies that deal with grief and situations using supernatural metaphysical thing. It's a Wonderful Life, E.T. There are all kinds of movies that have used otherworldly presences to make us understand things. And sometimes it can be maybe a little bit hokey or whatnot, but not to the extent
Jacob's
of
Ladder's Jacob's Ladder. The first one that pops into
that's
my
a good
head.
One.
Such a great movie.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Whether it's grief or death or whatever. But movies like this are, to me, inherently evil. And this is a movie that has now completed what I call the Trilogy of Evil. And it started with The Bucket List many years ago, which is a movie about two
people. I hate your stupid guts.
Yes, exactly. The movie that says it's okay if you're dying and you can do everything you want to do in life if you have $1 billion. That movie gets the, you know, the Hollywood Shuffle. We gave it the finger. That's what I did to that movie. The next one was Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Yeah.
Okay, a movie about 9/11 that kills Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And now there's this. Okay. All released by Warner Brothers, by the way.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. So it's the Warner Brothers Trilogy of Evil. And you don't even, I mean, you think I'm giving away stuff now. You have to see this movie to appreciate the level of evil that it's operating on. Because as this movie plays itself out, there are additional layers to the evil of everything that's going on. And Kate Winslet is given nothing to do. And then the thing is that all the three friends all have their own issues that then start to be helped by the actors with their own issues. Kate Winslet has – she wants to be a mom. She's 40. Michael Pena's dying. Edward Norton's kid won't talk to him because he's a philanderer. So there's all these problems. They hired to help Will Smith, but they're really helping themselves kind of thing, and maybe getting his business in the meantime. This is an inherently evil film, and – We could just cut it off right now. This is the worst movie of the year.
Okay.
This is the worst movie of the year.
And I'm looking at the running time. It's only 97 minutes long.
97 minutes long.
So they cram a lot of crap into 97 minutes.
They do. They do. And I know you wanted us to bring our Star Wars stuff here today, but if you in the corner, I have Love, Time, and Death I brought with me.
And only you can see them?
Only I can see them.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Wow.
But trust me, they are here.
Now, but for the people who like I said, who have been inundated with the trailer or the TV commercials, to find out that that's the plot, it seems to me like there's a bit of evil in the way the film was represented, too, to the public. Like, I think people thought they were going to get, like, this metaphysical kind of a film, when, in fact, it's just a bunch of jerks who are messing with a sad guy.
Right. I think that, there will be – if that's the movie they want to see, and that's the movie – and they're okay with that. And if it worked, maybe we all would have been okay with it. But they go in and find out this gaslighting plot, because that's exactly what it is. I don't know how you can respond to that unless you fall for some of its twists that then manifest throughout the movie.
Yeah.
It almost reminds me of the way you're describing it. It almost reminds me of the Sunny in Philadelphia Christmas special where they try to do a Christmas Carol thing for Danny DeVito's character.
That's right.
Like, will you just pretend to be the ghost of Christmas past? Right. And just, will you just say Frank Reynolds is a jerk? He's sitting, he's over there. Just say it.
Everything in this movie is done with a straight face.
Yeah.
Oh,
and the characters on Philadelphia are evil. So
they are.
Right. Like, well, there at least you understand.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That's...
Here that, you know, they take away his business, but they feel bad about it. You know, that's the level that they're acting on.
Wow. All right. That's Collateral Beauty, and it's terrible. Worst movie of the year, according to Eric, and nobody went to see it. Made $7 million over
the
weekend.
Don't go see it.
Yeah.
Unless you want a story to tell at Christmas dinner.
It was it made less money than the second weekend of Office Christmas Party.
It made less money than the two movies Will Smith cameoed in, Jersey Girl and Winter's Tale.
Right. Okay.
Opening weekend.
Opening weekend. All right. All right. Well, let's move on to something good, shall we? Colin, why don't you tell us about La La Land?
All right. Well, this is a musical from Damien Chazelle, who's the director of Whiplash from a couple years ago.
Which was your favorite movie of that year.
My favorite movie of that year, which was 2014, I believe. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Number two on my list. Number one was Interstellar. If I remember correctly.
Number eight on my list.
Yeah.
So this is a musical, and it stars Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling. Emma Stone is a struggling actress in L.A., going on, you know, several auditions, you know, every day. Ryan Gosling is a struggling jazz musician, who's forced to play, you know, Christmas standards at a restaurant that he works at. And that's where they first interact. Well, it's not much of an interaction, but they meet up for real at a friend's party.
No, for the first time they interact is on the freeway.
All right, right, right. That's right. That's right.
When she flips him off.
Well, yes. I'm trying to think of the chronological because it goes back and forth in time. Is that really? Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right, so, but they meet up for real at a friend's party where he's forced to play, he's playing keyboards for a really bad 80s tribute band.
He's got a keytar.
Oh, my God. It's so bad. And that's where their relationship begins, and it builds, and the film takes place over the course of a year or so, and they both realize that
it's also, I just want to mention really quickly, the structure of this movie, the first time I saw La La Land was, I believe, the same weekend that Gilmore Girls, the new Gilmore Girls, debuted.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And
same
the,
here.
The structure of the movie and the structure of the Gilmore Girls reboot.
Yeah.
It's exactly the same.
It is, pretty much.
Season, by season.
Yeah.
I was beside myself.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Where was I? So their relationship builds, and they realize that their dreams might be in conflict with their relationship. She tries to get a one-woman show off the ground. He's trying to open this old-fashioned jazz club. But you know, it might not work out. He takes a job instead as like a keyboardist for this mainstream rocker played by John Legend. So that's your basic story. It's a very simple, straightforward boy meets girl, boy loses girl kind of story. But it is an old fashioned musical. Like, it is a full on musical, takes on, stuff like, there's some, a friend of mine said it reminded him of the Umbrellas of Cherbourg. It's got, big flashy numbers. It's got really small, intimate, numbers. Damien Chazelle is a guy who loves music and musicals, although this is not his first musical. His first film was a lot like this, only it was like a black and white mumblecore film. It was called, I have it written down, Guy and Madeline on a Park Bench. It was black and white mumblecore, but it was a musical, much in the same way this one has a similar story. So this to me feels like a do-over of that film. It's much better than that film. Guy and Madden on a Park Bench. Guy and Madeline, not Guy
not
Madden.
Guy Madden on a Park Bench. That'd be
That's
weird.
A film. Yeah. There you go. I saw it after I saw Whiplash, and it kind of drove me nuts. I wasn't a huge fan of it. So this film feels like a do-over of that, and it's clearly it's more focused. The characters are more likable. I mean, this is the third film Gosling and Stone have made together, and they're just one of the great screen couples. I mean, that we've had. Their chemistry is just fantastic. I think their singing is really good. Their dancing, they're clearly limited, but they do really well. There are just so many wonderful flights of fancy in this film that are, that could only be in a musical, but it feels organic. It doesn't, these musical numbers don't feel wedged in or anything like that. Like Damien Chazelle really knows what to do with this kind of thing and where to put these musical numbers. There's a long stretch of the movie where there are no musical numbers, so that when you finally see one again, it feels really special. So this is really, you're going to be hearing a lot about this film during awards season. It is a front runner for Best Picture, could very well win. This is one of the year's best films. So
okay, we'll take a break. When we'll come back, we'll get Eric's thoughts and my thoughts about La La Land, which is opened this weekend. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll come back with more on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. I think Dave Plyer is in for Steve Grzanich this morning, if I'm not mistaken. Because Dave told me that he was at the Christmas party on Friday. He told me that he was filling in. I can't remember whether it starts. Oh, it does start today. Okay. All right. Thank you for telling me that, Dave. So Dave's on at 5. And I know Cochran's off, I think, too, this morning. Who's filling in for him, Dan? Do you know? Pete McMurray will be filling in for Cochran. See, and Plyer is tomorrow. So Grzanich is in today. Okay. I knew something was going on, man. But there was just a frenzy of insanity at the office Christmas party. So, Colin and Eric are here to review the new movies, and they're here live in studio because it's a special weekend. A Star Wars movie opened up, and both of these guys are huge Star Wars fans. They brought a bunch of their Star Wars stuff down here. We made a web-exclusive video that you'll see at WGNradio.com if you want to check out Colin and Eric and all of their Star Wars toys and cool stuff like that. But we are reviewing all the movies this weekend, and Colin just told us about La La Land, which is the new musical featuring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone, directed by Damien Chazelle, so he liked it, loved it, actually, so now Eric will tell us what you think of La La Land.
If ever there was a movie, the right movie for the right time, it's this one. When people have been asking me since Thanksgiving, like, what do we have to look forward to, what movies are going to be for awards, or what should I go see, this is always at the top of my list to recommend. This is a very easy movie to recommend to anyone, any man, woman, adult, you know, teenager, whatever, it doesn't matter. When you use the word musical and you talk about, you say that word to people, some people, you know, that sparks their interest. Other people kind of go, oh, it's a musical. But it's nice to see a, someone attempt a musical that is not just a recreation of a Broadway show. It's not just some bombastic, you know, greatest hits, classics kind of thing. It's not Moulin Rouge. Okay, it's it really crafts the style of old, like, MGM, Gene Kelly-type musicals. Other than a couple of their really early numbers, there aren't any really big musical numbers. I mean, other than there's some dancing stuff and there.
Well, the opening is massive.
Right, the couple in the early on in the dressing scene. But after that, it becomes very low key. It becomes, you know, it becomes more introspective and more bittersweet and sad and funny. And this movie is just, it's just right. You know, everything about it is just right. It's a movie about dreamers and love and, you know, the heartbreak that comes with both of those things. You don't even want to sort of mention the third act of this movie, because that's a moment when wherever you are on the scale, it is then elevated tenfold by the end of the film. And I don't, you know, the way people react to it, I'm very curious to hear how people react to it other than us. But everything Colin said is right. I mean, Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone have this down. And Ryan Gosling he's becoming the guy. You know, he's the guy that you want to see in comedies and romances and whatever, Blue Valentine, anything. You just want to see this guy doing his thing. And Emma Stone is, you've used the word natural many times. Even on something as silly as Saturday Night Live. And it's true. She has it. Both of these people have it. And that's what people want to see right now. And at a time when, you know, some people say there is no hope, well, here's a movie that gives us a little bit of it.
I've seen it four times. it's my favorite film of the year. I mean, I'm gonna blow the deal. You know, we're going to be doing our list in a couple of weeks. This is number one. I love every frame of this movie. I just from the when I first saw it, and after that opening number, I was like, okay, that's it. I'm done. I'm done. The opening number is astounding, and the direction of this, you know, is. And I loved Whiplash. I have not seen the first film, the guy Madden on a park bench, so I haven't seen it, but I will definitely check it out now. I'm very
a lot
very
of
curious.
People like it. I couldn't get into it.
Okay. Yeah. But the direction in this movie is absolutely astounding, and the cinematography and the editing, everything on the technical level, flawless. Incredible complicated long takes in this film too. The opening scene, although tricked up a little bit, is made to look like it's one take, and beautifully, seamlessly done. And the choreography and the way it's done, and just the beauty and the final crane shot at the end. Come on.
Yeah.
There is a scene that is one take. There's a musical number that is one take, where they're looking for her car, and they go into the musical. That's one. It's one take. That's not. There was no tricking in that. That's one take. And they're dancing and they're singing and it's just beautiful. It is a throwback to some of the best musicals ever made. Unapologetically old fashioned. You know what I mean? Like this is not winking. There's no tongue in cheek here. This is genuine love and genuine affection. It's a beautiful movie on every single level. It is a beautiful, beautiful movie. The songs are great. The numbers are beautifully staged. The acting is stellar. Gosling is great. But Emma Stone, she is just luminous. I mean, just watching her during the musical numbers, her face, the way she uses her face and her body. She was made to do a movie like this. She was born to make a film like this. And again, you guys both mentioned the chemistry between the two of these people is, I mean, it's unbelievable. And it does, you know, the final part of the film becomes very bittersweet. I cried like a baby. I've seen it four times, and the last like 20 minutes of the movie, I lose it. But on a good level, it's a movie about hope. It's a movie about dreams. It's a movie about the good and bad parts of relationships. It's also a great movie about LA. I mean, like a really, you know, just like a knowing film about the cutthroat business of trying to get a part or trying to do the art that you want to do without compromise. J.K. Simmons is in it for like, you know, he's in a couple of scenes. There's a wonderful, you know, he does have a really, I mean, he's a jerk in the first part of the movie, you know, because he fires Ryan Gosling. But then later in the film, he's in a musical number that is just fantastic. He does this thing that's just so fantastic. Mm-hmm. I love this movie. That's all I'm saying. I love it. And I recommend it to every single person. If you're feeling down, and I got a feeling that this movie's going to resonate, Eric. I think at this time, this is the perfect time for this movie to be released.
Yep.
It's the perfect, not only, if you know, like what's going on with in the zeitgeist right now, but also it's a Christmas time. And people want to feel good during the Christmas holidays, no matter what's happening in the real world.
Right.
And this is that movie. I loved every frame of it. I've seen it 4 times. I plan on seeing it many more times. It's La La Land. It's the deal. That's all there is to it. So we got a break. Eric and Colin, hang on. We come back. We'll talk Star Wars. Catch up with everybody on where the Star Wars world is. Then we'll talk about Rogue One. All right. All right. We got a break here for the news on 720 WGN. Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here. That's me. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor at the Trib Tower. Here till 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich at 5. And at 6 o'clock, filling in for Steve Cochran is Pete McMurray. All righty then. So it's Monday morning. My dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We'll also have a recap of the terrific hockey game last night with our Blackhawks Express. And Esmeralda and I will play another edition of the pop-up video home game. It is the movie reviews, and it's a special week. Star Wars movie came out called Rogue One, and in honor of that, we had Colin Suter and Eric Childress, our regular guys from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, come down to the studio live, and they brought some of their Star Wars stuff with them. And if you want to see the video of Colin and Eric and their collectibles and toys and all that cool stuff, it's a lot of fun. The video will be up on WGNRadio.com. So before we get into Rogue One, Colin, your history with Star Wars. Tell us a little bit about that and why it became such a big deal for you.
Well, I guess my history started with the toys. I had a friend who had a bunch of action figures, and he introduced me to them, and I kind of got to know the characters. And then, I don't know how many months or whatever, maybe a year later, I saw the film. And, I was a little too young to be sitting in a theater for 2 hours at that time. I was just a little too,
fidgety.
Very kid-like. And it wasn't until, one of the several re-releases that happened in the late 70s and early 80s when the movie finally resonated, as a story. It may have been after I saw Empire Strikes Back that I saw Star Wars again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember. The timeline's fuzzy. But, mm-hmm. I was a fan, ever since I had those action figures. So 5, 6 years old, whatever that was. And, what opening night on Return of the Jedi. And, it was always something that just captured my imagination and,
Now, where do you stand on the prequels?
They frustrate me. They really do, especially Phantom Menace. But there's things in them that I really like. I mean, I love the pod race scene in Phantom Menace. I think Clones has a couple of cool action scenes. I think the last hour and 20 minutes of Sith is really great. So it ends on a high note.
Yeah.
But there's dramatic things in Phantom Menace because, I wanted to see the story told. And I thought Lucas missed so many opportunities with how he told the story and how he told Anakin's, fall from grace. And, the seeds of resentment towards the Jedi should have happened when he was a little kid and was taken away from his mother, but instead Lucas just totally botched that whole thing. And it drives me nuts every time I watch it.
Okay. Now, last year, the continuation of the Star Wars saga was released with The Force Awakens.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you were a huge fan of that one.
I was, and I still am. I still have tremendous amount of joy when I watch that film. You could say,
And by the way, if you have stars, it's on every 15 minutes.
Okay, great.
True story.
It's on all the time.
I'm sure it is. Yeah. People say, well, you just love the nostalgia. It's a nostalgia. It's a fan service movie. Well, you know, fine. I don't care. I love it. When I watch it, I think the point of Force Awakens is, you know, to introduce us to new characters and get a new story going, and sort of passing the torch from the old to the new. And I love the new characters. I can't wait to see them again in a film. And I think that's what you should get out of Force Awakens. Mm. You know.
Okay. So. And Eric, your history with Star Wars?
Well, like with Colin, it did start with the toys. Mm-hmm. I remember having the toys. I don't remember exactly it. You know, if I saw them and they bought them, my parents bought them, or they bought them for me, and then I just played with them, and I would collect all the ones on the back of the cover. So they'd have all the listings of every.
They were Kenner, right?
Kenner, right. Yeah. All the different action figures that you can get. So, you know, you get one of those and cross them off, and then they'd have new exclusive figures that you'd have to send in for and those kind of things. And then there were the ships and all that kind of stuff. And I do have a more distinct memory of seeing Empire first before I saw Star Wars. I was actually doing prequel stuff as a kid at the time, but knowing everything that was going on in the movies because I had the action figures. Mm. I was able to identify everything in Empire because I had the Han Solo with the hoodie and all that kind of stuff, and the Tauntaun and the AT-ATs. So by the time I caught up with Star Wars and Empire, and then Jedi's released, that's the only thing you want to see in a theater. And sitting, while my dad stood in line for Jedi, we went to Woodfield and shopped, and we left my dad outside in the middle of the afternoon, and he stood outside and got tickets and wrapped around the Woodfield one, and we got tickets and we saw
him. The old Woodfield one.
That's where I saw Jedi for the first time.
While we were getting
opening
tires
night.
On the car,
I saw Jedi at Golf Mill.
Golf Mill. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was an amazing experience.
So you're a bigger fan of the prequels than I think anybody on the planet.
Possibly, but I do. But I will say this: that I do admit, especially now, that I did have my blinders on a bit. Mm. When Phantom Menace and Clones were out, I had them on. I'm like, no, this is mine. You're not going to ruin this for me. Right. The way Colin's talking about Force Awakens a little bit. I do recognize the flaws in those movies. I'm not an idiot.
Yeah.
But at the time I did see Phantom Menace like five times in the theaters. Mm-hmm. I still like the things that Colin likes. I probably like even more. And I'm not as bothered by some of the creaky acting because I'm just like, well, Mark Hamill was a creaky actor back then too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I make those comparisons and things like that. But then you get to Force Awakens last year, and that's what the blinders start coming off. You start to realize what Colin was talking about last year about the practical effects and going back, and you recognize that not everything is just a green screen and digitalized.
Right.
That we're there. We're in these little things that they create. And, South Park made the great argument this year that it was just, they call it, a Happy Days reunion show, basically.
Yeah.
Okay, I understand that argument, but I could also counter-argument and say, like, well, if this whole thing is this big universe and this movie is talking about politics and empires and rebellions and all that kind of stuff, you know, couldn't the argument be made that if we ignore history, we're doomed to repeat it? Could we make that same argument that they're going through the same stuff that they went through 30 years ago just to a new group of people? And the reason The Force Awakens works so well is because of these new characters. We love Rey and Finn and Poe and BB-8. Mm-hmm. And Kylo Ren is a great villain, and they do some really crazy things with him. And then they give you a little of the nostalgia, and so they ease you into the transition. And then by the end of the movie, you're ready for Episode 8 to follow the new characters.
Yeah. Well, and my history with Star Wars, this is I think a very interesting in terms of our age differences, because this I think really impacts the way I feel about Star Wars as opposed to the way you guys felt about it. I was 12 when Star Wars came out. Now, I should have gone nuts like all my friends did. They all went nuts. Like, 12 year old kid seeing Star Wars for the first time. But I never had any of the toys. I never, when I saw the movie, I didn't get the toys or any of that stuff, because I'm 10 years older than you, Eric. What am I, like 8 years older than you? Colin, something like that. Okay, so I was 12. You guys were little kids, and I was a little kid. I was 12 when I saw it. But it just didn't affect me the way that it affected everybody else. That year, for me, Close Encounters was the one that really grabbed me. That was the one, and I think, and I've talked about this before, that I think it's because Close Encounters is grounded in a reality, whereas like Star Wars is this whole like fantasy world. But like, you know, the Close Encounters takes place in Indiana, you know, and I was like, I knew those people, and you know,
still had spaceships, so it worked for me.
It did have spaceships, but for me, it was I was more fascinated by that movie. That was the one that I saw repeatedly in 1977.
Yeah.
So then when Empire came out, I went, you know, immediately. I saw it at the Esquire. Star Wars, I saw at the Norridge. Empire, I saw, and I saw Star Wars a few times in the theater because my friends kept going. Empire, I saw at the Esquire. Liked Empire a lot more. Thought Empire was really great. But again, didn't flip over it. By the time Jedi came out, I saw Jedi a week before I graduated high school. So I was pushing 18, and I was already cynical. So I had an attitude going in. And when the damn Ewoks showed up, I went, I'm done. Yeah. You know, so I never got into Star Wars at all. I hated the prequels, except for Sith. I'm glad you pointed out the last hour and 20 minutes of Sith.
Yeah.
Because the first part, I was like, oh, God. But the Sith ends on a real high note. And I really was surprised by how much I liked Force Awakens. I thought Force Awakens was terrific. And I thought J.J. Abrams did right. And I felt good for like guys like you who are real fans. And I, you know, and a lot of people felt betrayed by what Lucas did with the prequels. And for me, watching that movie in a room full of people last year who were so excited, it was palpable. You know, I mean, it's just amazing. And just to see that payoff and how happy everybody was. And it made me happy, too. I was a huge fan of Force Awakens. And I thought it was included in my top 20 last year. So that's sort of my history with Star Wars. It's obviously a lot different than what you guys, you know, it was an essential part of your childhood. And I can totally understand that. For me, that would have been like Hammer movies. Like for, that's the kind, I had like monster models.
Yeah, those toys.
Yeah. I had all the little monster models that you would put together. So Wolfman, Frankenstein, that was what it was for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can totally understand how you guys would latch on to Star Wars in that regard. And I appreciate that. So the newest movie, which we're going to review after we take a break, and we'll tell you all about it, is called Rogue One. It's a Star Wars story. Now, I want to make sure that, because some people might be confused as to where this fits in on a timeline and what are we talking about here? How come it's not Chapter 8 and all this other? And there's a reason behind that, because this is Disney has launched this, like Marvel, this other universe now, where they're going to tell stories within the Star Wars world. And this is the first one of those. Although, no, did Clone Wars, those animated things, does that count? Or?
It sort of counts. Sort of. I mean, it's part of, I guess it's part of the canon in a way.
Yeah.
It's just not everybody pays attention to it.
No one talks about the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Except for kids.
Right. All right, well, you guys hang on, all right? We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll tell you all about Rogue One, a Star Wars story. We'll review it. We'll talk box office, too. Eric and Colin are here live in studio for a special Star Wars morning. All right, we'll talk about that after we take a break here. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Monday morning, that means my dad will tell a joke because it's a jokey time, brought to you by the greatest restaurant on the planet, the Gale Street Inn. We're going to play another round of pop-up video between Esmeralda and I, and we'll talk about some actors who had weird music careers as well. But as you can tell, it's Monday morning. Movie reviews happening right now, and it's a special week because the Star Wars movie opened, and so we invited Colin and Eric live in the studio with me, and they brought their effing toys with them, to quote from Slapshot. And Star Wars means a lot to these guys. They brought some really cool stuff, collectibles, including a BB-8 that actually works. And we've got all the video on that, and it'll be on our website if you want to check out the exclusive web-only website video of them doing that. But they're here in studio, and you can also see Eric's fabulous bad Christmas sweater, Empire Strikes Back Christmas sweater. That's on the video as well. So check it out at WGNRadio.com. Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about the whole thing that Disney has decided to do with the Star Wars stories. Colin, what you can kind of explain how they've opened it up.
Yeah, so there's the, you know, last year was episode 7, and then next year is going to be episode 8, and in a couple of years it'll be episode 9. And in between these episodes, we're going to get these little spin-off, you know, one-off films that sort of expand the Star Wars universe, but also tell, you know, some backstory that we've heard in passing from other Star Wars films. So in this case, Rogue One, you know, tells a story about how the Rebels, you know, found the plans for how to blow up or, you know, the Death Star. Next, in a couple of years, we're going to see a young Han Solo movie, which will be, you know, just Han Solo as a teenager or early 20s-ish or whatever. I don't know. But I don't know how young we're getting. But Alden Ehrenreich.
From
Hail Caesar.
And Beautiful Creatures.
Right.
And,
yeah. And the
Rules Don't Apply.
Yeah, the Warren right. Beatty movie that nobody saw. Nope.
Right, including yeah. me.
Including me. And yeah. I love Warren Beatty.
None of us saw it.
Oh, man. It's terrible. It was, but to be fair, I wanted to go the following week. And
yeah.
It wasn't planned. I mean, they yanked it.
Yeah.
There was one showtime. It was like 9:45 in the morning or something. I was like, what?
Yeah.
So, you know, once after episode 9, I don't know where they go from there, but I'm sure they got stuff in the pipeline.
Sure.
They'll probably be maybe episode 10 and 11 and 12. It'll just keep going.
Yeah.
It's a money behemoth
them. Yeah. So now, Eric, what about the expansion of this universe? Like we mentioned before, it's a little bit similar to what they're doing with Marvel.
Yeah. I mean, financially, like Colin just said, it absolutely makes sense. I mean, it is a cash cow. And anytime you can just say the word Star Wars, you're going to draw an insane amount of interest. And the thing is that now what people are somewhat worried about is whether or not it's then going to dilute the product, because it's one thing when you have an episode, an official episode, every 3 years, and there's sometimes much longer, obviously, there was an anticipation. There was, you know, there's a reason Force Awakens blew box office records last year, not only because people waited for it, because it was going to be rebooted, it was episode 7, and it was good. All those things just came together. And, you know, but you know, the way I look at it is like, well, it's working okay with Marvel. They seem to have the good head on their shoulders, knowing where to take this universe. Now, not everyone connects, and there'll probably be Star Wars films that may not connect as much as some of the other ones. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's any reason not to do them. You know, I mean, I think if you're going to go into this universe, like Colin said, there's so many stories that you can tell from this thing. Stories you may not even know you want to hear at this point. And it probably will get diluted and tiresome. I'm like, oh, we're getting another Star Wars movie this year. It's not going to be as special. So we lose a little bit of that. But if they keep making good movies, who cares?
Yeah. $155 million over the weekend, Rogue One. Mm-hmm. Was that expected?
It was more than expected.
Yeah.
I mean, again, the tracking companies hedged their bets, and they were saying, oh, it could be 100, could be 140. Like, great, why don't you choose a lane, guys?
Yeah.
Okay. I said 160 this week.
Okay.
That seemed about right, because there's no way it was going to do Force Awakens numbers.
What did the Force Awakens?
$247 million. Opening weekend.
That's because they had like screenings at 5:30 in the morning.
Yeah,
and, you know, I know because I was at one of them. But but this one, I noticed that wasn't happening.
Okay.
So
155 million is the 12th best opening of all time. That's not bad.
No. Yeah. Okay. Now we know all about the background on it. We'll find out about Rogue One after we take a break. We got a break here for the news, and after the break, Colin, you'll tell us all about the plot and what you thought of it, and we'll talk more about Rogue One, a Star Wars story, which is the latest in the world of Star Wars. But right now, we got to take a break, and the news is up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower. We're here until 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. Pete McMurray in for Steve Cochran at 6. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. My dad will call in and tell a joke, and we'll play another round of pop-up video. Well, before the break, we were talking about the world of Star Wars, and now the latest movie is called Rogue One, which is kind of an offshoot film. Colin, why don't you tell us about Rogue One?
All right, so this is, like I said, a film about how the rebels find the plans for the Death Star and how, you know, they figure out a way to blow it up. The central character is a woman named Jin, who's played by Felicity Jones. And her father is, you know, kind of the chief scientist or one of the chief scientists on the Death Star who is in charge of installing the weapon that can blow up a planet. But he defects and, you know, raises his family on this kind of remote farm on this, you know, remote planet. But he gets captured and he gets separated from his daughter. And this is when she's 5 years old. And then the movie jumps ahead about 10, 15 years. And she's an adult and she's in prison. She gets bailed out by, or she gets, you know, she gets broken out of prison by the rebellion, who thinks that because of her ties to her father that she, you know, might be able to help and figure out if there actually is a weakness to the Death Star and if it can be exploited. Diego Luna plays Cassian Endor, who is a kind of like a Han Solo type hired assassin for the rebellion. Forrest Whitaker plays Saw Gerrera, who kind of looked after Jin after her father got taken away. Ben Mendelsohn plays the Orson Grenick, the lead general of the Empire, and he's more of like a middle management general kind of guy. He's got to take orders from, you know, Vader and, you know, other people. I'm not sure how much we're supposed to say and not say, but anyway.
Vader's in the trailer.
I know Vader's in the trailer. Yeah, that's why I don't mind saying
Yeah, I know. Vader's in the trailer. Yes, yeah. He is. And Grand Moff Tarkin is in the movie, for God's sake. So, and I'm telling you, I almost lost my mind.
One of the first things we said to each other after we went to the screening is Nick is going to lose his mind.
I swear to God. Okay, go ahead. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a little bit.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I'm sorry.
Lord.
But anyway, so more characters come into the fray, and eventually the movie kind of becomes a heist movie and a war movie and a Star Wars movie. And I think this is a really successful, very satisfying, you know, one-off film. And I think one of the things that really kind of gets the spirit of the Star Wars movies in this thing is Michael Giacchino's score. It is very well balanced in that it's like half of an episode 3 score and half of an episode 4 score, which is perfect because this movie takes place between those two episodes. And I think the performances are mostly good. I think Felicity Jones is quite good as the lead. I really love the character of Chirrut Imwe, played by Donnie Yen, who's this kind of sort of a Jedi, or, you know, he is constantly chanting to himself about the Force, and he appears to have a lot of Jedi skills. Doesn't have a lightsaber, but he does have a lot, seems to have a lot of Jedi skills.
And he also has the funniest line in the movie.
Yes, he does. There are actually a lot of funny lines.
I know, but that's
film.
The funniest line in the movie.
It is.
And I really laughed my ass off.
It is. Yes. And I also want to mention there's a great new droid character named K2SO. Doesn't roll off the tongue as well as C-3PO, but right. K2SO is a really funny, sort of filterless, sarcastic droid. Who just doesn't care. He's just all attitude, and he's just going to say whatever he wants, and I love that. So there's a lot of humor in this film, but there's also a lot of darkness. This is, you know, one of the darker Star Wars films. I think in terms of plotting and structure and character development, I think the movie loses a little bit. I think some of the characters are just a little short-shifted and aren't really that memorable, you know, the way we'd like them to be, you know, like the way they were in The Force Awakens. But I think that the last third of the film is so great. I mean, this is like a great Star Wars sequence. You know, the last third of this film is, you know, when everything just comes together. It's wonderful. I mean, and I've seen the movie 3 times now. I saw it a third time today. And I find every time I see it, the ending, even though I know it's coming and I knew how this was going to end, but, you know, the way it ends, I just have this huge childlike grin on my face at the end. So I think I rank it at number 5 on my list of Star Wars movies, you know, Empire, New Hope, Force Awakens, Jedi, Rogue One. It gets a lot right that that kind of makes up for some of its flaws, but I'm a satisfied Star Wars fan.
Okay, Eric.
Yeah, as everyone is going to be ranking these, because that's what everyone does these days. We have to, if a new something comes out, we have to, where does it place in the canon? So I would rank this 6th on my Star Wars list, and agree with a lot of things that Colin said. So I'll expand upon a few of them. The Donnie Yen character is my favorite new human character of the bunch. I think of all the new ones, he is the one that most clearly resonates as just a great original character. But also I think he is the way Colin described him, as this guy that is sort of in between Jediism, is that he's a true believer. He's a guy that wants to be a Jedi, but he might have some training or has picked up some things on himself, but he's not quite there. He can't call himself a Jedi. And to me, that's the connection to the audience. That's the connection to guys like Colin and me who played with lightsabers when we were kids. And we said, well, I'm a Jedi, and we would throw things around. We believe in the Force. We believe in these things. And I think that with his mantra and whatnot, we're going to be talking about Scorsese's Silence in a few weeks, which is a movie that's all about faith and losing faith and stuff like that. And I think that this is kind of a really great compliment to, you know, that subject matter. Of the new characters that I think don't resonate is Diego Luna's character. He's set up in the film to be this kind of the surrogate Han Solo-ish type character in the film, and to me, I think he's very miscast in the film. I think that he's supposed to be more world-weary and more beaten down, someone who, since he was like 6 years old, has been fighting this fight, and he looks like a guy who has just grown his first mustache. He doesn't roll off the screen in the way that I think the gravitas that a character like that is, especially as a compliment to Felicity Jones's character. I wasn't feeling him throughout the movie. The new droid is great. The last 30, 40 minutes of the movie, whatever it is, are terrific. I love seeing something so extended, and the way they're able to just do stuff with the X-Wings and the dogfights and all that stuff is great. All that being said, though, I wish that I felt a little bit more towards the end when things really started to get dark, figuring that things weren't going to turn out well for everyone in this movie. I still wanted to feel something for certain people and characters, and I wasn't quite there. Even this movie takes a long time establishing that these guys are going to finally get to work together, and when they do, then we're thrust in the battle, and then we go on from there, and it's all cool and great and fun. But I didn't have the same sort of emotional gravitas that I did on that bridge sequence in Force Awakens, you know, and which is, you know, is an all-timer. So I think the movie's good. I think the movie falls short of greatness. I think there's great geeky stuff in the movie that we're going to be talking about coming up. And I love that it does play fan service and it does play with the member berries a little bit and, you know, gives us our nostalgia. But I think it's a good start to what they're trying to do.
I liked it better than you guys did. I loved it. I thought it was great. You know, I liked it. I think I liked it just as much as Force Awakens. And I know in it for an entirely different reason, because it's an entirely different kind of film. You know, it's interesting to see how they're going to handle, you know, this universe going on. I really like the one-off ideas. I think they're great. I thought this was a terrific movie. And it's different enough because it doesn't open up with a crawl. You know, it doesn't. That was me. It doesn't open up with a crawl. It doesn't have the overture at the beginning, so it's kind of a little off-putting when you're like, I think the audience was like, whoa, wait a minute, where's the big overture? Where's the crawl telling us what's going on? And from that moment on, it felt like a different kind of film. It was familiar enough, And yet it feels like a completely different kind of film. Stylistically, I think the way it was made, certainly the tone. This is the darkest. I think this the darkest of all of them, of all the Star Wars movies. Certainly maybe not as dark as Empire, but it's right there. I mean, this is
pretty dark.
Sith is dark. Well, yeah, Sith, he kills a bunch of kids.
30 kids.
Yeah, he kills 30 kids. But it's beautifully executed. It takes a little while. I think it takes a little while to establish everything. It's not a perfect movie. I'm not quite sure what the hell Forrest Whitaker was doing acting-wise. I'm not really sure what the choices.
Yeah.
It's a very strange.
You can say that a lot about Forrest Whitaker.
No, I know, but like the voice that he chose in this, it's weird.
Yeah.
That doesn't necessarily. I thought Diego Luna was fine. Mm. I like the fact that like one of his first scenes, he kills a dude. I was like, okay, that's pretty cool. You know, as you guys talk about, the last half hour of this movie is spectacular. The last half hour is phenomenal. And I can't talk about, there's a sequence in a hallway that is about as badass as I've seen a sequence all year. And it was just so awesome. And building up to that final shot, man. And it's just great. The battle sequences are really intense and really well done. The mix of practical effects and special effects, fantastic. Gareth Edwards directed, I think he directed this movie very especially the last 40 minutes. Really beautiful. It's exciting. It has some very funny moments, and it's really dark. And I loved it. I thought it was great. Now, I do want to mention, I talked already about how Peter Cushing does appear in the movie. I've mentioned it already. And it's astonishing. It really is. It's really astonishing. Now, it's weird, too. But the Cushing family okayed it. They're fine with it. And, you know, so everybody was okay with it. It was just for about 2 minutes, I was like, what's going on here?
Yeah.
What is that, Peter Cushing? And Peter Cushing, as you guys know, is like my hero, my childhood hero. Mm-hmm. And he's it's not just one scene.
Yeah.
It's a good supporting part.
Yep.
For a dead guy. Guy's been dead for 20 years. Mm-hmm. And I thought they didn't understand. I have no problem with it. I was just happy as hell. I was like, oh, my God, it's Peter Cushing. The dude does his voice, sounds exactly like him. Exactly like him. So I thought that was cool. So I'm really a big fan of this movie. And if they keep making Star Wars movies like this, I'm on board, man. And I thought it was great. And it did massively well over the weekend.
Yeah.
So, all right. So that's three positive reviews. Oddly,
yes.
I'm giving the most positive review of the three. I thought it was great. Yeah. Really, really good. Okay, so we're going to take a break. When we come back, guys, we'll talk box office. And then preview some of the stuff. We're going to be off a couple of weeks. No, we're only going to miss one Monday or two? Two Mondays. Okay. Yeah. All right. So anyway, we're gonna come back and talk about some of the movies that are coming up to preview, which we will not be able to review over the next couple of weeks. And we'll give you a preview on that. All right. So we'll take a break. We'll come back. Colin and Eric are live in studio. We'll do some box office right after we take a break here for weather and traffic. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, here till 5 a.m. And hanging out with us live in studio, we had them come down and bring their Star Wars memorabilia with them. We did an exclusive web-only video where you can see some of these really cool things that Colin and Eric have from their Star Wars collection. Go to WGNradio.com, click onto our page, and you'll see the video, web-exclusive, of us talking Star Wars and showing all the really cool Star Wars stuff that they brought to the studio. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
And thanks for coming down. All right, let's talk box office. Rogue One, $155 million. We were talking a little bit about that before. That was pretty much expected, right, Eric?
Yeah.
Okay. Number two is Moana with 11.6. Boy, that's a big drop.
Big drop, yeah. Well, the Moana fans, you know, had another movie to see this weekend.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that's made $161 million. How is that working in terms of?
It's still on pace. I've kept saying that it's on pace for about $230 million. Any other time of the year, it would seem like this is on its way out. And it will depend on when Sing opens this week. We'll see exactly how much audience gets taken away from that.
Right.
But compared to other movies in the past, it is still on the pace to do $230 million because of the Christmas holidays. You're going to have 2 weeks where weekdays are in play again.
Right.
And Christmas is always a big day, especially for families. So,
yeah.
I mean, this movie is doing just fine.
Okay. Three, Office Christmas Party, $8.4 million, bringing its total up to $31.5 million.
Yeah, that's exactly what, You know, not a bomb, not a hit, just
Yeah. Collateral Beauty with $7 million, as we mentioned earlier, a massive bomb for Will Smith.
In the States, yeah. I mean, unless the international audience, his fans overseas, really have a taste for this movie, I mean, it only cost $36 million, so it's not hardly the most expensive bomb of the year. But yeah, it's the weakest opening he's ever had as a leading man.
Okay.
The weakest ever.
Five Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Through is $5 million, bringing its total up to 207.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's over $717 million worldwide, so doing just fine.
Yeah. Colin, how many times have you seen it? Just the once?
Beasts?
Yeah,
yeah, just once.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, I like it a lot. I definitely want to see it again, but this is that time of year when we just get busy with
right.
screenings and screeners right. and everything else.
Yeah, because I know that the Harry Potter series you saw multiple times, most of
them in the
theater.
Yeah. I mean, this one I wasn't quite as taken away by it as I was, you know, those films.
Mm-hmm.
I'm, you know, not quite as engaged with these new characters. But like I said, you know, repeat viewings sometimes help. It certainly helps with Rogue One. I think, you know, the third time I saw it, you know, I think the movie plays better with each time I see it. The mm-hmm. pacing feels a little more natural.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Number six, Manchester by the Sea, $4.1 million, $14 million total. Is it in a massive wide release?
Yeah, it went wide this weekend. Went from like 260 theaters to like 1,200.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that's still a very solid number for a Casey Affleck drama that everyone says is very depressing. So,
and even he did during his monologue on SNL.
Yes, he did. Not a bad episode last night.
No, it was a great episode.
That Dunkin' Donuts commercial was
unbelievably funny.
Actual customers.
Unbelievably funny.
Right.
Yeah.
When he takes that coffee cup and just throws it
on the
windshield.
It's just hilarious.
Yeah.
I thought the episode was really solid.
It was very,
I thought it was
good.
One of the. That and the Dave Chappelle, I think, were the two best episodes of the season so far.
Yeah.
And they used Casey Affleck right.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They wrote good stuff for him. The monologue, he's not like a stand-up guy.
Right.
So to bring out Goodman and Baldwin was a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It was they did a great job with it.
Yeah.
And Manchester by the Sea is one of the best movies of the year.
Yeah.
And
people are discovering that. I mean, people are aware that this movie is drawing the awards buzz, and it's out there. And they're publicizing it very well.
Yeah, no, they're doing a really good job with it.
You
know? And okay, and then number seven, oh boy, La La Land. 4.0 million with 5.2 total. And how many theaters is it in?
200. Okay.
All right.
So it's doing just don't worry.
Yeah.
It hasn't gone wide yet.
Yeah.
And it's going to be, you know, this has got a long awards run in front of it.
Yeah. So. It's, we reviewed it earlier in the show. If you missed it, it's my damn favorite movie of the year. all right. Number eight, Arrival, 2.7 million, 86 million total.
Yeah. Word of mouth has been great on this movie.
And Colin and I, we both really liked it.
Loved it.
Yeah. That ending just sucks.
I know, man. I know.
It's the worst. He's an evil person.
Number nine, Doctor Strange. It's up to $226 million, but that's just in the U.S. Is it doing well worldwide?
Yeah, it's over like $650 million worldwide. So Marvel's doing fine, too.
Okay. And then number 10, Nocturnal Animals. $1.3 million, 8.8. How many theaters is that in?
I don't know, actually.
Is it wide?
It's wide-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like in that 800 screen realm, I think.
Okay.
And it's been in the top 10 for a couple weeks now. I don't know if people think they're supposed to see that movie or
no, they're
what,
not.
But...
that's what I think.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit now since we're going to be off for the holidays. Opening on December 21st is Assassin's Creed Passengers and Sing.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of those?
I saw Sing.
What did you think?
Are we on the embargo for that or no?
I don't know. Well, it played at Toronto, so I'm going to say no.
Okay. I don't like it.
Okay.
No.
All right.
It's not good. Go see Moana instead, I guess. If you have to see an animated film, I guess go see that one.
Okay.
Okay.
I just wish that Jennifer Lawrence and Chris Pratt would have done some publicity for Passengers.
No, they haven't really done anything for that. I wish they would have screened it here in Chicago before tomorrow or tonight.
Yeah,
actually, because wherever they screened it this weekend or this past week, they apparently didn't tell critics to shut up about it because you want to talk about spoilers. They're
Oh, really?
Yeah, there are people just blabbing their mouths off and saying how awful the movie is. So,
wow.
This isn't me, folks. This is the critics that Sony didn't tell to shut up.
Sony. The movie never looked interesting to me.
It did to me. I mean,
I like the two leads.
I love the two leads. Yeah. I like her more than him in movies. And I like science fiction movies, and it looked like interesting.
Okay.
To me, so.
All right. Well, that's Passengers. Yeah. Assassin's Creed. We won't even talk about.
No.
December 23rd, In Her Name and Why Him. Now you've seen Why Him.
I have seen Why Him.
Okay.
I think I am on an embargo. For
okay.
That
that's
one. Okay.
That's the one. That's the one that my parents and I are going to see on Christmas.
Are you now?
Yeah. We also saw Office Christmas Party and Bad Santa 2 together. So that's just, you know, if we're stringing along the R-rated.
I'll just say that there is a certain consistency this year with or this season with comedies.
Yeah. Okay. And then on Christmas Day, Fences, Hidden Figures, and Lions. Lion. I've seen all three of those. Mm-hmm. Are we on embargo on that, too?
Fences is open somewhere. It opened somewhere this weekend, so we could talk about Fences.
Because we got to do it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. And I'm a big fan of the play, and I thought the acting was great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure Denzel should have directed it, but I thought the acting was good.
I am total agreement on that.
Okay.
I haven't seen the play, but I think the acting is very good.
Yeah.
And a little too long.
Yep.
But the acting is very good.
Yeah, I don't think it's very. I don't think Denzel staged it well. That's all I'm saying. But I think the acting is phenomenal.
Yes.
So, all right. That's all we got time for. Monster Calls is coming out in January. 20th Century Women is coming out. And you mentioned Silence, the new Martin Scorsese film.
And I liked Hidden Figures.
I did too. I liked Hidden Figures.
And it's timely because John Glenn just died. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
True.
Okay. Guys, thank you so much for coming down.
Thanks for having us.
It was really great. You guys will be down in studio on the 9th of January.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's in a few weeks. And we'll do our best of list. And we'll have an exclusive podcast that we're going to be doing with all these, you know, these subcategories and stuff that you can only hear on our podcast. So make sure you subscribe to that.
Great.
Guys, have a great Christmas. Have a great New Year's. Okay.
Thanks.
And I'll talk
vacation.
To you guys. It's always great to have you come down. Colin and Eric, and we're going to take a break. We got the news coming up next right here on 720 WGN.